Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm delighted to say that this is our 100th broadcast in the series. I'm also pleased to say that we have a leader who befits the milestone, Tony Scott, the Corporate Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Microsoft. Tony and his team are responsible for security, infrastructure, messaging, and business applications for all of Microsoft, including support of the product groups, the corporate business groups, and the global sales and marketing organization. Tony champions IT as a value-added business for Microsoft and works with all the company's groups to identify opportunities, structure IT solutions, and deliver measurable returns to the business. He's also the executive sponsor for Microsoft's operational enterprise risk management efforts and supports the integration of management principles from the quality and business excellence team, which drive continuous and breakthrough process improvements across the company. Before joining Microsoft, Tony was the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer for the Walt Disney Company, the Chief Technology Officer, Information Systems and Services at General Motors Corporation, and the Vice President of Information Services at Bristol-Myers Squibb. Tony also spent time at Marriott International, Cadran Systems, Sun Microsystems, and PricewaterhouseCoopers. Tony has a Bachelor of Science in Information Systems Management from the University of San Francisco, and also has a Juris Doctorate with a concentration in intellectual property and international law from Santa Clara University. I recently caught up with Tony by phone, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as Tony spoke about the change in IT culture necessary to enact the kind of transformation he has led. Principle 3, Project and Portfolio Management, as we discussed Tony's use of what he refers to as the GET method, get ready, evolve, and transform, throughout the IT transformation. Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as Tony spoke about how the IT organization engaged with the business partners throughout the transformation, as well as some other topics. And for those who are interested, there's a version of this interview on our website that includes a presentation that follows the questions and answers throughout. Thank you for listening to our first 100 interviews, and we hope you'll continue on this journey with us for the next 100. Tony Scott, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Hey, it's my pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you. Tony, certainly all of our listeners are familiar with Microsoft, and I would say probably most of them are somewhat familiar, at least as users, if not people of interest in technology, that Microsoft is a business that's been going through a pretty significant transformation over the past few years. They may be less familiar with the fact that your organization, the IT organization, has been going through a comparable transformation. And I was certainly very interested in preparation for this interview and understanding how you're aligning your organization structure with business processes as opposed to the traditional alignment with business units or product areas. I know that you've said in the past that digital business and process don't respect the traditional IT organization. And so I wonder if we could begin with that, as I think it's a really interesting topic and certainly one that other organizations might at least want to think about. What exactly was the genesis of your thought process in developing a business process-aligned IT organization?
Well, it probably, for me, started even well before Microsoft. And what I had noticed over the course of several roles in the industry was that as businesses digitize, and I'd gone through this at General Motors and at the Walt Disney Company prior to coming to Microsoft, I noticed that quite often there was a direct correlation between the systems architecture of the company, the physical org chart in terms of how the company was organized, and how IT governance took place in that institution or that organization. And it stands to reason that governance is all about making decisions about what gets funded, and it creates boundaries for not only funding, but also for architecture when it comes to systems. And if it's true that most companies were organized around their analog business, then that structure probably made sense historically. But I noticed as companies digitized that often the governance model, the way IT was organized, suddenly needed to be different than the company org chart. And that is, digital business process is really a lot about speed and customer satisfaction, efficiency. And it has less to do with the old analog things that we are familiar with, which were channels of physical distribution, for example. So I began to form some ideas about what the right way to do that might be. And then both at General Motors and at Disney, I saw great examples where organizing IT differently and forming around the new digital business processes made a lot more sense, and that you could tremendously impact the speed with which you could get to market, or tremendously impact customer satisfaction by just creating a different model for IT and looking at the problems in a slightly different way. So that's kind of the long background of how I got to it at Microsoft. And I guess in the end, I'd say, as I got to Microsoft, it occurred to me that we were doing massive digitization of our business in every single area we did business, and that this was going to be probably the biggest of the digitization journeys that I had seen up to that point. And therefore, it was really important to get the IT org structure right and our systems architecture and our business processes properly aligned.
That's really interesting, Tony. And it actually seems to suggest that IT can form a sort of glue in the organization and identify where there are commonalities that maybe the various business units or traditional business entities in the organization aren't recognizing quite as quickly if, in fact, they're operating in their traditional silos. Since this is something that you've thought about in the context of multiple major organizations, you mentioned GM, you mentioned Disney, of course, Microsoft. Is that hypothesis correct, that IT can, in fact, begin to sort of play the role of that glue across the organization and identify where there are greater opportunities for collaboration across the traditional silos?
Yeah, and I think it's beyond collaboration even. It's really digitally connecting the company across perhaps multiple business units even. You know, what we realized is customers don't really want to see your org chart. They don't really care how internally you're organized, but many times that's the way we go to market, or that's the way we present ourselves on our websites, or that's the way we try to ease the transition between the analog and the digital world, is to preserve some of those old analog models. And I found it just doesn't work. And so if you ask the question, you know, which organizations in a large enterprise really span all of the businesses of the company, assuming it's a fairly complex company, IT is one of them. Finance, you know, might be one. Sales and marketing might or might not be one. And I think there's a responsibility, if you're a CIO or a senior member of the IT organization, to make sure that the things that you are doing or that we are doing from an IT standpoint are the right things for the future business of the company.
Tony, for those who are listening, recognizing, of course, that no two companies necessarily would go through the exact same kind of journey, but I'm sure that the question's occurring to our listeners. That is, what steps have you gone through as you're now in the midst of this transformation towards aligning your organization to business process?
Well, we created a three-stage view of this. We called it GET, G-E-T, and it stood for the three phases. Each of the letters was for one of the three phases, and the G was the sort of get ready phase. In that part of the work, we spent a lot of time not only with our business partners, but also with our IT teams, to really understand at a much more granular level what our digital business processes were or were likely to be going forward. And it was, I think, really important to spend that time. And the oft-used phrase of get everybody on the same page applies here, because, you know, I've been around a little while, and it's really important, if you're going to do any kind of transformative work, that you're prepared for it and that you have people having a clear understanding of what it is you're trying to do. In the evolve phase, we looked at what were the organizational changes, the business process changes, and everything that could be affected, including our own IT methodology. And we created a number of different work streams that allowed us to do the necessary work that we thought we needed to do. And then the transform phase was when we actually made the key organizational changes, implemented our blueprints, and began to follow the new governance models and everything else that we had prepared for. And so that's been a useful construct for us in terms of, you know, planning, then developing the right work streams, and then finally the execution for the design that we created. And I think that is particularly important in terms of the word design, because this was really a design effort in the inception. It started with research, you know, then do the plan, then do the execution. And we called it Get Ready, Evolve, and Transform. And I'm sure many CIOs and others in our profession would recognize that as a pretty familiar process for managing change.
Getting your colleagues outside of IT on board, I guess part of that G and get, was this at all controversial? Was there any feeling that people who would have kind of dedicated resources from your team align with their specific area, that now they would be sharing them with others that have like processes, for instance? Was part of the explanation kind of overcoming any kind of angst people might have with the kind of changes that you were suggesting? Or was this something that was kind of intuitively correct from their perspective?
Yeah, I think it varies by business area, and certainly, you know, timing also is everything. So we were starting to feel certain pressures that came about as the digitization of our businesses started to occur. And so to one degree or another, all of our business partners were beginning to feel the pain, some more acutely than others. And so when you come and you can have a discussion around, you know, why are we having pain and what can we do about it? And is there a roadmap that gets us to a different place? I found our business partners got pretty engaged pretty quickly. And the good news is we'd started with a small experiment that we could point to and say, here's a great example of what we mean that they could then relate to and understand more of what the full impact might be if we did it on a much bigger scale. And so I found it to be a conversation that was more welcome than not in almost every single case. And considering the alternatives available to us, I guess, probably very welcome.
That's great. Can you give us some examples of some of those business processes? I recognize that it's not fully baked as yet, as you're still in the middle of this journey, but can you talk to us about some of those business processes that you've identified and some of the subsequent changes that IT has made in order to align to those?
Sure. Well, it starts, I think, in most companies with product development. How do you create the very products that your customers hopefully want to buy from you at some point? And in our case, we had individual product development silos that all relied on a set of IT capabilities to get their jobs done. You know, at Microsoft, it would be things like software repositories, product information. It might be archive repositories of code libraries. It might be code signing or, you know, a whole bunch of different things that, at least at Microsoft, were traditional things that each product group did independently and IT supported. And over the years, a certain amount of, I'll call it individual silo-like behavior, you know, naturally happens. And when you step back and take a look at it, you say, well, this is probably not the most efficient way. Probably more importantly, it's resulting in some things that are not effective for a customer, and it's slowing us down in terms of getting to market. And so by changing our internal process and creating a common set of capabilities for our product groups, we're seeing examples where we're taking, you know, 50, 60, 70% out of the time of certain processes just by relooking at it through a different lens and re-engineering the digital support that we provide for those product teams. And the nice thing is if you're a developer in one group, you happen to move to a different group, now all of a sudden the tools, the processes, and the technology that you're going to use are identical, and you can go a lot faster than you could where you had to relearn something every time. That's one example. Another one, great one, is in marketing, where a customer comes to our websites and maybe they're interested in Office or Windows or some other product. And those used to be very siloed kinds of experiences. But we know from talking to our customers that quite often when they come to our websites, they're very interested in the breadth of things that Microsoft offers. And they don't want to be, you know, necessarily pigeonholed down one particular product path or experience. And so another case where you know, we come at it from a customer first perspective and then try to give them the information that they're interested in, regardless of who the originating product group was.
That's great. Those are great examples, Tony. I think it's really interesting in multiple answers to questions already, you're talking about a transformation of an IT department to think much more about the end customer's experience. You've talked about metrics like end customer satisfaction and cycle times versus your competition, or thinking about how quickly you're getting things to market. And that seems like, at least for the average IT department, a really different way of thinking about things. So many IT departments, when they refer to customers, they're talking about internal customers. And I think part of that is because they don't have access to external customers. Can you talk a bit about your own cultural change in terms of thinking about the end customer experience as opposed to simply your colleagues within Microsoft who are the users of your team services?
Well, clearly, I think both are important. And in fact, in many cases, we use exactly the same measures for customer satisfaction and for speed of process and those kinds of things. But there's nothing like real paying customers who spend money with you to let you know whether you're being successful or not. And customers vote with their dollars and vote with their shopping baskets. And so I consider that to be the most rich feedback and probably the most important feedback that we get. And I think the other sort of revelation that we had as we went along the journey was that, you know, the history of IT has been about serially automating various tasks. And we created a lot of productivity over the last, you know, I'll say 30 or 40 years by automating manual tasks or automating the analog process. But all of that in many companies is built up into this ball of string, or, you know, you might call it a hairball, depending on your perspective, that in and of itself is the accumulation of 1,000 great ideas, but 1,000 great ideas doesn't an architecture make and doesn't make a great customer experience all the time, or even most of the time. And so when we looked at this accumulation of 1,000 bits of automation and said, is this really the design that we would have with a customer in mind or a speedy, you know, process execution in mind? Many times we come to the conclusion, no, that's not really what we would want. And I kind of equate it to building a car over 3 decades, you know, one part at a time, taking advantage of the latest technology each step along the way, you'd end up with a pretty, you know, weird car. And so if you step back and you say, let's use modern technology and do a design that leverages that and has the customer as its focus, and you start with a design intent, quite often you end up with something that's very different than where you are or where you would have gotten to through this serial automation path that I think many of us were on.
That's interesting. Tony, it also strikes me that, of course, your company has a lot of different types of end customers, from commercial B2B type customers, as well as, of course, a great number of B2C customers. But I wonder to what extent you find yourself with some advantages of at least having a subset of your customers being those people who have your very role or people within the IT departments of your commercial customer space. Does that allow you a degree of empathy or an ability to connect with them in ways that maybe from your past experiences might have been a little bit different when the customers of, say, GM or Disney were not necessarily CIOs or reports to CIOs of those businesses, since, of course, both of those are B2C companies? Can you talk a bit about the advantages that may come, or maybe even some of the parallels that go beyond that?
Well, I think most of the CIOs I talk to and people that are engaged in, you know, professional IT capacities realize that there is a lot of common ground no matter what specific business you happen to be in. You know, most of us run financial systems. Most of us have human resources systems and other kinds of things that, frankly, aren't all that different at the end of the day. And, you know, witness the large ERP boom of prior decades, or CRM, or some of the other sort of very common things that most of us have had a hand in implementing. And so when I talk to that group of people, they're interested in those things, of course, and they're interested in how we do that at Microsoft. But they're also, I think today, more interested in this digitization journey, because that's an area where it means something a little different to each company. And the competitors are different. Where the value is in the digital process chain is perhaps in a different place. And so I see CIOs in particular looking for those nuggets that come not only from their own industry, but cross industries. And they certainly engage with us very heavily on that particular subject. And I think find a sympathetic ear to your earlier point, because we do know that it's not easy and that sometimes the journey can be a long one.
Can I ask you, as you go through a transformation like the one you're in the throes of, does it suggest that there are a new set of skills or maybe some past skills or existing skills that need to be augmented compared with the old way of doing business? Are there some skills that you're more heavily recruiting for as a result of the transformation you're leading?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of nuances. But first, I want to say, I don't think that it means that the IT profession or CIOs in general are in peril in any sort of way. Most companies that I know of and see are going to have a lot more IT next year than they do this year, and probably more the year after that, just because of this digitization process. But I do think there are some new skills that we have to bring into our portfolios. One of them is the whole idea of understanding the brand and its brand management, brand character, brand promise and brand experience and all of the things that are attached to that. Because we are, in fact, creating all of those things on a pane of glass and through the shopping experience and the way that all of our customers, whether they're internal or external, deal with the company. It's all through a digital experience. And so I think brand and all of the things that go with that are probably an increasing need and increasing set of skills that, frankly, most of us, when we went to school, didn't get that much exposure to. And I've heard several CIOs say their new best friend forever in the company, if they're engaged properly, is the CMO for the company, the chief marketing officer, somebody who's involved in the curation of the company's brand. And so I think that's one. And then certainly the focus on digital business process, and that is largely about process efficiency and connecting the dots across the company. And so it could be the people who create the products, it could be the people who manufacture the products, or it could be sales and distribution, depending on the company. But I think a general business awareness and a very fine sense of understanding of how those business processes work, how they're going to work in the future, and the role that IT can play to greatly enhance those business processes are a set of skills that all of us are either developing or, if already developed, looking for a lot more help in those areas.
Very interesting. And speaking of skills and the people who possess them, obviously yours is an industry, generally speaking, the technology industry, that truly forges a war for talent. There's so much that's written about that topic. And obviously having the best and brightest minds on your team is all the more critical given the kind of things that we've been talking about throughout this conversation. Can I ask just how have you thought about developing the right kinds of incentives such that the best and brightest people choose to join the Microsoft team?
Well, I think it helps to have a company like Microsoft as a part of the recruiting effort. You know, IT departments don't exist on their own. They exist in the context of the larger company. And I'm pretty happy with the Microsoft brand and our attractiveness as a company, you know, now and certainly going forward. And so that helps. And I think all people, when they're considering whether they want to come join a company or not, are interested in several things. You know, is the work interesting? Is the company a company I can be proud of? And can I make a contribution that will really make a difference? And I think when people look at Microsoft, you know, hopefully when they're looking at Microsoft IT, they say yes to all those things. A good company, one that I can be proud of, one I can make a contribution, and where I'll make a difference are all part of that conversation. And I think there are many companies who, like us, you know, have some of those attributes. And that's great. And I think those companies will tend to be the more successful in recruiting the kind of talent that we need.
That's great. Before letting you part, I wanted to ask you about IT trends. And we've talked about several things which certainly can fall under the topic of IT trends. But aside from the ones we've already covered, are there others that particularly excite you as you look out a couple of years or 3 years' time?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of talk about cloud technologies over the last couple of years, and I'm very excited about that. In fact, I see it as a part of this digital process journey that we're on, and a key contributor and a key enabler of some of the things that we want to do. As I said earlier, we're looking for speed and we're looking for customer satisfaction as our primary pivots in this transformation that we're going through. And the cloud is a key part of that. Using our own cloud technologies, we're able to develop faster, scale quicker, and address bigger problems and bigger challenges than we ever could before. And I think those are all great ingredients in the recipe for success going forward. So I'm a huge fan of that. I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg in terms of promise that cloud can deliver. But I'm certainly a huge fan at this point. And, you know, I think it's one of those things that's somewhere on the hype curve where people start to get experience and really beginning to realize strong benefits. And so I look forward to a lot more investment, both in people and also on the technology side in the cloud space.
Well, it must be so exciting, actually, just hearing you answer that question and others, that you work for an organization that is helping shape and bend a lot of these trends. And so you need to not necessarily always look too much further than maybe across the hallway or down the hallway or maybe even on your own team to see how some of IT will be used in the future. It must be exciting to be in such an environment.
Well, I think it is. And I'm fond of sort of joking and saying, you know, I've never yet met a developer who said to me, "Hey, I've got way too much CPU. I don't know what to do with it," or "too much memory, you know, please take some of it back," or "gee, all that storage you gave me, I can't figure out what to do with it." And while it's a little bit of a joke, the reality is smart developers can figure out new challenges and new things to do with these new capabilities that we have that we just couldn't do before. And I think that bodes well for our future, not only as a profession, but also in the businesses and enterprises that we support.
That's wonderful. Well, Tony Scott, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing your perspectives. It's really been a great conversation.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Our editors are Chris Davis and Calhan Kuhl, and our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.